Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
And you're welcome back. This is a story now we're returning to from earlier in the year, but it harks back to October 2023 when Joe Drennan was killed by a hit-and-run driver in Limerick on a Friday night. You'll remember this story. It's the saddest, saddest story. He'd only just turned 21 at the time. He was a journalism student at UL from Camross in County Leash. Whole life ahead of him. The driver of the car was a gangland criminal. He had 46 previous convictions. He was out on bail at the time for other offences and was forbidden to drive. He was sentenced then to 6.5 years for killing Joe Drennan. But the sentence was to run concurrently at the same time as another sentence, which was for 8 years for firing a gun in a whole separate incident. This would mean he wouldn't serve basically any time for Joe Drennan's death, effectively. There was much outrage about this. His family called for an appeal of that decision, and we spoke to Joe's sister, Sarah Drennan, then, and it's good to hear her again this morning. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Oliver. How are you?
Not so bad. This appeal was heard last week. Can you just remind us the outcome of that appeal?
Yeah, so he got a consecutive sentence. So effectively, he'll be serving 5 more years for what he did to Joe. It was very emotional. And, you know, while the sentences were finally made consecutive, thankfully it means Joe's life was properly acknowledged, and that's all we wanted, really. But, you know, at the same time, there's a huge emptiness, because you just realise that's all that could be done. And, you know, I've spent the last 2 years fighting for justice, and we finally have some measure of it now, it's just nothing really compared to what we're living with. You know, he should still be here, so it's just, yeah.
And this is the last word of the justice system, really, isn't it? Kieran Fogarty is the convicted man. He's 21. He's from Hyde Road in Limerick. So his sentence for dangerous driving causing death increased by 2 years. The last year, it means that Fogarty basically now jailed for a total of 13 years instead of 8. You spent a lot of time fighting for this. We spoke to you in February. What has life been like for you since we last chatted?
Oh, it's just been, I suppose, exhausting. Like, the last 2 years we've been fighting so hard for justice, and, you know, while the outcome is the right one now in the end, there's just no real sense of relief, you know.
Really?
Like, it's just, yeah, the whole court process is incredibly re-traumatising, you know. Every time we sat in that courtroom, we had to relive the night Joe was killed. And,
right.
You know, even when we thought it was over in January, we were just pulled back in again with legal errors and appeals, and it should have never been necessary. Like, you know, the justice system really needs to show more understanding of what families go through and victims and stuff. So it's incredibly hard, but yeah.
You have been through the system, and you've spotted things. Have you got particular things you would like to see changed after your experience? It sounds awful.
Yeah, well, I suppose our hope is, by speaking out, is that Joe's case will not only be remembered for, like, the injustice that we faced, but would help probably change the system so that, you know, families don't have to go through what we had to, just to have their loved ones recognised, you know, because right now it's possible for a sentence for killing someone to run concurrently with another completely separate crimes, and it's so wrong. It completely devalues life and the victims and their families and what they go through every day, you know. So hopefully some change can come about it, you know.
Particularly because the amount of work you had to do to get this appealed, and as you say, when you're appealing, you're re-traumatised going through the same story again and again. Now that this stage of fighting for justice is done, what now for you? Are you able to move on to, you know, the next stage, the next part of your life, dealing with the grief, the loss of your brother?
Yeah, I suppose, like, grief, it's so impossible to explain. Like, it's constant, you know, it's every part of my day. It's, you know, it's the first thought I think of when I wake up and the last I think at night, you know. And
wow.
It wasn't just, like, losing Joe wasn't just losing my brother. Like, it feels like you lose a piece of yourself, you know. It's so hard. It's unbearable. And, you know, even my poor parents, they're just so lost and they're completely heartbroken. And it's something that we'll have to live with for the rest of our lives, unfortunately, and it just doesn't go away, you know.
You're only in your 20s yourself, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm only 25, yeah.
It's remarkable, just you've had to do a lot of growing up and becoming a hugely responsible adult in the last 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, I'm only 25 and I suppose I somehow got this role of trying to advocate for justice for Joe, and something that I never wanted to do. But Joe used to say himself to us, you know, get up, dress up and show up. And I think he probably meant it more in a fashion sense at the time, but yeah, kind of it stuck with us, you know, and that's just what we've had to do for the last 2 years, is show up for Joe, because, you know, he can't, and it's hard and it's exhausting, but, you know, his words keep us going, and, you know, we're just hopeful that he'd be proud that we kept showing up, and because he definitely would have done the same for us. So, yeah.
This was his goal in life, wasn't it? To be a journalist, fight for people who don't have justice.
Yeah, he was incredible. He was an incredible journalist. Like, he was so kind and caring and genuine, and like he just was amazing, and he cared so much about people and injustices, and, you know, getting people's voice out there that wasn't heard, you know, marginalised communities and such, through his work in journalism. So, yeah, he was amazing.
You have a motto from him to live with, as you've just told us. Your mum is Marguerite, your father, Tim. There were seven of you siblings, were there in the family in total?
Yeah.
But you've managed to keep the family together in this terrible tragedy.
Yeah, I mean, sure, we just have to keep going, and that's it, you know. Like, my poor parents do their best, but, you know, you can see the pain in everything they do, and, you know, like, they had to live every parent's worst nightmare, and we've lost our brother, they lost their son, and in many ways, you know, we've lost part of ourselves, all of it in it, like, and it's just, we have to try and keep Joe alive by talking about him and, you know, sharing his story and stuff like that. So, yeah.
You were very close, weren't you? You spoke nearly every day, nearly?
Yeah, we spoke every day, like, sometimes 3 or 4 times a day. Like, he was my best friend, you know. He was so much more than a brother to me, and he was everything you could ever want in a brother or a son or a friend, and he cared so much about people, and he always made you feel important. And, you know, I even was thinking about the time when he sold his first journalism story to a magazine, and he was so proud of himself, and it was coming up to my birthday around that time, and instead of spending all the money on himself, like, he went straight into Brown Thomas in Limerick, and he came out with 2 Marc Jacobs bags, one for me and one for him. And, you know, he was so, so caring and generous and thoughtful, and he always made you feel special, and we just really, really miss him.
Well, look, you're a massively impressive young woman. There's no doubt he would say,
"Thank you.
There's my sister. She's looking after the cause that I had started." I don't know how you're bearing all of this and carrying it, but you're an extraordinary woman, Sarah.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
I hope you're going to be okay. I know you're just setting out on the awful path of grief, and you and your family, but you have the sympathy of the country, and you have our thanks as well, because you've done something incredibly important, which is representing a lot of victims, survivors of victims like yourself, who don't have the voice.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's just, yeah, hopefully this can bring about some change, and no other family has to go through what we had to go through, because it's awful. But yeah, but thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Sarah. And look, you've done your bit now, so look after yourself. And we're thinking
of all
the Drennans. And I'm glad that the Drennan family got some justice at last. It was definitely worth fighting for. We should say, anyone affected, please go to rte.ie/helplines, and there are supports available there.
Email oliver@rte.ie.
RTE Radio 1.
The Gaiety Theatre cordially invites you to be our guest at this year's breathtaking Gaiety Pando Beauty and the Beast. Join me, Nana Potts, as we serve up the ever-enchanting tale as old as time. So, for a beautylicious and beastly-tastic extravaganza, it's Beauty and the Beast at the Gaiety Theatre from November the 24th. This is no ordinary Pando.
It's a
entertainment updates on RTE Radio 1.
To be here now, to hike in the hills, to talk the big talk, to take that winter plunge and chase that fleeting sun, to lie beside her at night, even with the snores. Last year, When I felt worried about my heart, getting immediate treatment from the best in the game made all the difference. Urgent cardiac care at Mater Private Dublin. Here, 24/7, 365 days a year.
Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
Wasn't she an incredible, Sarah Drennan, unbelievable guest there. We spoke to her in February. I'm glad they got some justice, and they have a long road ahead of them. There's a message here, a lovely message. The pain of sudden bereavement is intense. I hope Joe's family find some ease and know they have done him proud by their fight for justice. The depth of their love for him is clear. And RTÉ.ie, by the way, /support is a great place. There's lots of resources there to give people support. Now, we move on to something entirely different, and I'm glad to meet this woman again. Cathy Belton, good morning to you.
Good morning, Oliver.
On TV, we know you from, well, we have the clinic and Red Rock on the list, but there are so many things you've done over the years. You even appeared in Circle of Friends at one stage, oh. Glen Rowe another time. We'll talk about it all. I think a load of people know you on stage quite a bit, don't they?
Yes.
The Abbey and the Gate. But this morning, we're chatting mostly because Hidden Assets is back, season 3.
That's
on
RTÉ. Right.
You're Nora Dillon in the show.
Yes, I'm Nora Dillon, the forensic accountant, a member of the CAB team. It's a fantastic experience to dive into the world of CAB. And that's what the series is about, the Criminal Assets Bureau.
Yeah.
We're following a portfolio manager who's embezzled 27 million. It brings us from Dublin to Bilbao. It's a quite European palette. And it's been an absolute joy to be part of such a big show.
And such success, because crime thrillers, particularly made in Ireland, they don't last very long. But this is season 3. And
this is
it
season
was Antwerp
three.
In season 1, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. And it's been bought all over the world, Oliver. So I think it really stands up for itself. It stands up for itself with the subject matter, the way it's been made, slick production values.
And a wonderful cast.
And a wonderful cast, if I may do say so myself. But we've an amazing European cast as well.
Yeah.
And that's been a joy to be part of such a bilingual cast and crew and to travel with it. But also to play such an amazing, complex, independent woman like Nora Dillon.
Yeah.
It has been a gift of a part.
By the way, the other countries you mentioned, where are they watching this as well as Ireland? Do you know?
All over the world. I mean, I'm shocked. I was doing another gig during the year where I was travelling to Serbia, and somebody on a plane in Frankfurt came up to me and said, "Nora, where is your whiteboard?" I was blown away, absolutely blown away.
I had heard it was like it's really big in Germany and they're mad for their crime thrillers.
Mad for their crime thrillers. Yeah. But it's just testament, Oliver, when you invest in something, and fair play to RTÉ with the amount of drama they've put out in the last few years, there's a hunger for us and an appetite for us. And if it's well made and it's invested in and developed, so these writers, these wonderful writers were in a room led by Peter McKenna for the last few months. Mm-hmm. And if we can just keep going like that, we'll sell more and more great programmes around the world.
So tell us about Nora Dillon. Why would a German come up to you in Frankfurt and go, "I love you"?
Nora Dillon. Nora Dillon. I've never played a part like her. And I think Nora Dillon is an independent, hardworking, ordinary woman doing an extraordinary job. Mm-hmm. She's the forensic accountant for CAB. So she's not a guard. She was seconded from the tax office.
Yeah.
Her flaw is she's a workaholic. This is her life. It's her complete life.
She's free of ego in a kind of like an environment of detectives who've loads of swagger.
Totally. Totally. She's egoless. Her ego is the whiteboard. Her ego is the whiteboard.
That's why the Germans loved it.
That's what, exactly.
I love a forensic accountant.
And it's funny, I was saying to your lovely Tara there, you know, since I've started playing her, you know, I'd meet somebody and they go, "Oh, what do you do?" And I said, "I'm an actress." And they go, "Oh, wow, that's fascinating. What do you do?" "I'm an accountant." "That is amazing. Tell me everything." Everything.
You're the first one to react like that.
But anyways, Nora is the forensic accountant. So I suppose what you could say is the whole case is filtered through her. Mm-hmm. She has to chase the money. Her whiteboard is a visual representation of the case. She's in the office all the time, as was Cathy Belton in the office all the time when they were all running around with guns and beautiful, scenic, fabulous.
Were you jealous at all?
I was mad jealous. Mad jealous.
Want to kick a door down, do you?
I want to kick a door down and have a gun, but I have a red pen. And it says as powerful, Oliver.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Who are you telling at this time of the year when tax returns are due?
Exactly.
And the conflict for you now in the new season is a young upstart detective.
We have a new detective who's joined the team called Liam, played by Donal O'Haley. Mm. And I think people are going to enjoy this relationship. It's very tense. There's always one, I think, in every office who would climb over your head to get to the top. And it's just starting to bubble now. But I think the audiences are in for a big treat with what happens between these two.
You must have had great collaborations with Peter McKenna writing Nora. Do you now at this stage, since it's a seasoned show, get to kind of go, I think Nora should be doing this now and doing that? Or he's...
Well, I was very lucky. I was in Peter McKenna's first short film that he wrote and directed many, many years ago. And then he gave me that wonderful break with Red Rock playing Patricia Hennessy.
Yes.
He's an extraordinary talent. And then when Nora Dillon was written and I started playing the part, he's amazing. I think Peter writes amazing parts for women as well. And he starts to listen and watch. So you can see Nora from season one that I think writers do start to write for you, or they see kind of quirks.
I see.
And Peter is so on top of his craft that he started more or less, you know, moulding her.
You know exactly what's going on. You don't need to leave a voice note for him on WhatsApp and going, I think now what you should do.
Oh, I would
three.
Never dare change a comma or a dot of Peter McKenna's script or indeed any of the writers in Hidden Assets. But I think that's the power of it. It's so well written. And as an actor, you can throw yourself on it and not fall between the cracks if you trust the writing.
It was a great idea to seize on the Criminal Assets Bureau, known to everybody because of the money laundering, terrorism financing, corruption, gangland. Everything is kind of linked in there, isn't it?
They're an amazing organisation. And I think what's the power of this show is that we, the audience, are getting an insight into the inner workings of CAB, because it's a secret. They're all anonymous.
It's secret. You met one of the secret operatives in CAB for this season. Is that correct?
Yes, I was very lucky. I got in twice to CAB and I met with a forensic accountant. I will not tell you if it's a man or a woman because they are anonymous. But they were fascinating in their information and generosity and how hard they work. And the big thing, Oliver, because I also went down to the... just research. You have to do this research and then you throw it all out the door when you're on set and you'll be in the moment. But I went down to... CAB would have to go down to the court proceeds of crime every few months because everything has to be approved by the court. So if they're freezing assets, if they're taking houses... Everything has to be approved. So
a
forensic
job.
Accountant has to dot every single I, because if it doesn't go through the court, then all their years of work, you know, are gone.
The
so it was fascinating to talk to this forensic accountant and then how hard she has to work to get it. They have to work to get it, you know, through the courts. That was fascinating. Really fascinating.
Did you find them a very kind of firm... collected kind of people, or are they under an amount of stress?
Amazingly articulate, calm, generous, so professional. And as actors, we're going in and we're not, you know, obviously I wanted to know about the accountancy, but also simple things like, what do you wear? What do you have for lunch?
Yeah, okay.
How many coffees would you have during the day?
Yeah.
And they were so generous and so patient with that, you know, because even with Nora's costume, I wanted a tank top because she's at the board. She can't have jumpers. She can't have blouses.
Yeah, she's busy. She's overheated.
Overheated. And as well with CAB, they need comfortable shoes and they need, you know, you need to be smart. They were all so smart in there and dressed immaculately, but they're working maybe through the night. So you need to be comfortable as well in your smart clothes. So all those questions.
They work through the night.
Well, if they're on a raid and getting ready to.
Yeah.
They're an extraordinary organisation.
Did they tell you what they made of Hidden Assets, the show?
Well, let's just say they were very nice and very open. And I hope they're enjoying it. Yeah.
Oh, there was no, they didn't tell you.
They were very nice about it. Yes, they were.
As we said, the production was in Ireland. Where did they shoot much of Hidden Assets?
We shot all over Dublin, from Killiney. We're shooting some of the cab scenes in down by the Point Depot there.
Oh, great.
And then we shot some of the cab scenes, the office scenes in Antwerp, because this is a co-production as well with Belgium. So we did a lot of the cab scenes in Antwerp. So you could be shooting a scene in a corridor in Dublin, and then a few weeks later you walk into the office in Antwerp and continue the scene. And that was a wonderful experience, an amazing Irish crew, but then an amazing Belgian crew as well. And then they shot in Bilbao.
It's moved to Bilbao for this season.
It's moved to Bilbao.
Oh, I'd say that was a nice change, no?
Fortunately, I can just tell you now, Oliver, Nora didn't get out of the office.
I thought the office would be recreated in Bilbao.
She doesn't go to Bilbao.
It's a disgrace.
It's a disgrace. That was next
year. That was worth a voice note to the director. But you do have to travel then for... Do you like that part of the job? Because you do gigs all around the place, don't you?
Yeah, I do. You know, it's part of the work, and it's the nature of the game, and you get to visit countries that you mightn't necessarily visit, and you get to live in it. I was in Serbia over the last few years on a show in Belgrade, and it's an amazing country to visit. The people, amazing crews, you know, amazing talent. But there's nothing like when you're shooting something at home and you're in your own bed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and the nature of our industry here, there's more and more being shot here and made here. So there's a lot more opportunity to shoot something and go home at night to your
What were you filming in Belgrade, by the way?
I was filming a series called Miss Scarlet for Masterpiece PBS. It's an English, set in the 1800s.
The American public broadcaster, yeah.
Yes.
So it's a period.
Period drama, the first female detective in London, 1800s. And I was playing Miss Scarlet's kind of mother come housekeeper come best pal. So that was fascinating. Huge sets, really impressive sets and costume and, again, great scripts.
I've heard a film crew say that period is like a page a day is all they manage to film sometimes, that it's such a slow way of working.
It is. And getting into costume and corsets and hair and makeup. So your days would probably start earlier than they would, for instance, with Hidden Assets, you know, before you put on your...
You're not being put into corsets and massive wigs and things.
No, just the tank top. But
that's what you want.
That is a careful placement for Nora too.
What a time would you be up at in Belgrade to get onto
usually
it?
About half four.
Half four.
You'd be up, picked up, and then you might be 2 hours in hair and makeup and costume. It was the same. I was shooting a period drama here over the last few weeks, The Hard Acres, set in Yorkshire, but they picked Dublin, which is great to shoot. But that was 5 o'clock starts and 2 hours in hair and makeup.
And what time do you finish? Do you get off set?
Usually about 7.
7 p.m.
Half 6, 7 p.m.
If anyone thinks that it's an easy job.
There's nothing glamorous about filming.
5 a.m. till 7 p.m.
Yeah, and then you're home and maybe looking through scripts. And
you're going to bed.
You're going straight to bed.
Basically,
straight to bed.
But it's the kind of the different job from one day to the next that you must love about it.
That's the best thing about it, Oliver, is that you don't know what you're going to play next or what world you're going to jump into next, and to be doing what you love. And I love it.
There are massive productions going on here all the time at the moment, as mentioned. What was the industry like in the 90s when you were at Glenroe and things like that?
Well, that's when I came out first. And, you know, your only way into this business for me was through theatre, which it was amazing. Yeah. But there was Jim Sheridan, there was Neil Jordan, and there was Glenroe. And that was
the whole industry.
That was it. and I have to say, and he's just left us, but Michael D brought in the tax incentives, Section 381, and re-established the film board. And investment started 20 years ago. And look at the industry we have now, Oliver. Like, we're on the global stage. But that took 20 years of investments.
That was the 90s, mid-90s, when he was the Minister for Arts and created all of that.
Yeah, and we have a lot to thank him for. We really do. And I really, what a great president, but what an amazing Minister for Arts. I went to see a great film in the IFI the night before last, Sweetie Barrett. It was one of Brendan Gleeson's first films.
I do remember, Sweetie Barrett, yeah.
And Cillian Murphy was first film. And it was directed by Stephen Bradley, who wrote and directed it. Marvellous film. Made in 1998, produced by Ed Gainey. And I thought, wow, look where they all are now.
Yeah.
You know, but that came from investment.
It came from that period.
Yeah, that was the start of it. And we got to nurture our our artists.
You've stayed fairly private, haven't you? You don't do a huge amount of interviews. And I always thought there'd be pressure on anyone in the acting business to get out there, do constant interviews, get your Instagram accounts up and running. But you've just been able to gracefully float through this industry.
I think it's the shy man's profession, acting. I really do. I don't think any actor is very comfortable, really. I think we hide behind characters. Certainly, I think I do. And while
you don't
I'm having
strike me like that kind of person, you seem.
I'm having a lovely time, Oliver. I promise I'm having a lovely time here. But I guess the acting is the joy. And then obviously it's so lovely to publicise a show like Hidden Assets you're so proud to be part of. But I do think deep down, I mean, I think that's why I went into the business or into acting was...
And home growing up, it was Galway City or was it outside?
Galway City, Renmore. Yeah.
Renmore,
it,
yes.
Yeah, it was an amazing place to grow up. There was pantomimes, there was amazing community variety shows. Do you remember the community games?
Of course, yeah.
And we used to do
huge thing through the whole summer.
Yes.
And your dad was a very avid cinema goer.
He loved the movies. He absolutely adored them, as did Mum loved theatre. It was a house that we grew up in where the arts weren't something. They were part of our lives, but not in a pretentious way. You know, imagination was always nourished. Do whatever you want to do. Plays, Druid, the Galway Arts Festival. I remember Mum and Dad. Dad used to take a few days off work during the Galway Arts Festival, and the two of them would go in the morning and they would do lunchtimes, art galleries, plays. So I guess one of us had to go into the profession. Do you know what I mean?
The like pressure that was there.
Well, not a pressure, but it was just an amazing way to express yourself. And I was quite shy as a kid, I think, and I was very lucky. I was sent to drama classes by a wonderful woman called Rebecca Bartlett. And I think that's when I found my confidence and my tribe was through drama.
You were in the right part of the world too, weren't you, Galway?
Well, it's amazing what they're doing, Oliver.
Your mum kind of was interested in two worlds that don't collide very often. She loved country music and into the Druid theatre as well.
Yeah, she was an extraordinary woman. She loved her music. She loved her theatre. She was an amazing painter. But most of all, she was an extraordinary mother. We were very, very privileged, myself and Orina, my sister, to have such an amazing woman and a man of my father as parents. It was a privilege to grow up with a happy childhood.
And I'm so sorry, you lost your mother only this year, Anna,
yes.
Yourself and your sister.
Yes, I did. Yeah, alas, and we're heartbroken without her.
Oh, is it of all the jobs that people have to do when they're in the stages of grief, is acting a strange one when you're thinking of your mum? And
you know, that's a really good question, Oliver. I think when it happened first and Mum left us, I was in the middle of filming something. It was a bit of a saviour, because you have to pull yourself together, hold yourself together.
Really?
Interesting as well. I had to put a corset on every morning. And I remember kind of going, this is really good right now, and you're escaping the pain for a few hours.
Yeah.
And I think the corset actually held me together, and you go into that world, and it happened to be the 1800s, and I was playing such an evil woman. it was an escape, and it was a gift.
I can see that, yeah.
You know, but then obviously the camera stops rolling and yeah.
How's your sister doing?
She's amazing. She's amazing like me. She has a very high powered job, and she's working hard, and we're very lucky. We're best friends. We're best friends, and we're looking.
Were there just the two of you in the family?
Yeah.
Really? That was unusual. And her name is Orina.
Orina, yeah. She's a professor of pharmacology in UCD.
Go away.
Yeah. And she was extraordinary. She was an amazing musician. There was a lot of music in the house, and it was very lucky to have her. Very lucky with the family I got.
This is how you're so good at playing Nora Dillon, as this strong, competent woman.
Oh,
no, no ego.
Oh my God, I didn't know about that.
You do like playing problematic characters. Sister Claire and Philomena was quite a moment.
That was an extraordinary experience to work with Judy Dench and Steve Coogan and play that person. I remember at the time when I read the part of the film, I couldn't stop. It was so well written. It was like a bolt. And I remember saying, the one thing I can't do with this character is judge her, even though I know what I think about that nun. But I couldn't judge her. As a performer, I have to...
Interesting.
be true to her, which was a really interesting place to be.
You gave us all chills in that one.
I'm so glad.
You're having such a brilliant career. Oh. So I'm hoping it sounds like you're going to continue to enjoy it. But we can enjoy because the third season of Hidden Assets is on RT1 Sunday nights at 9:30. And if people haven't seen the first two seasons, they're on the RT player as well. And you can also catch it if you're in Germany.
Exactly.
Particularly, Cathy Belton, thank you so much.
Absolute pleasure, Oliver. Thank you.
Likewise.